hear the Yellow Rose of Texas, you know you're tuned to the International Service of Texas Radio Shortwave. We're coming to you from our studios in Port Isabel on the far south Texas Gulf Coast, over WRMI, Okeechobee, Florida, USA. We're on twice every Sunday, midnight UTC for 2 hours to North America on 5950 kHz, and at 1200 UTC for an hour to Europe on 15770 kHz. If you're a shortwave listener, it's likely you've heard Glenn Hauser's weekly show World of Radio on WRMI, WBCQ, or another outlet. Glenn recently posted program number 2200, noting that the inaugural program was in 1975. I wondered how far back I could find episodes of the show. Mick Delmage of Sherwood Park, Alberta, Canada, found two shows dating from 1986, almost 40 years ago. I thought you'd like to hear what could be heard back then, so I have two episodes, numbers 332 and 342. You'll hear recordings taken directly from a radio, so the audio quality is variable. I hope you can overlook that and enjoy radio from 40 years ago. If you'd like an electronic verification that you heard this program, email a detailed reception report to texasradiosw@gmail.com. Again, that's texasradiosw@gmail.com. There's a special QSL for this show. Here's episode 332 of World of Radio, recorded from WRNO, New Orleans, Louisiana.
This is Glenn Hauser with World of Radio number 332. On this edition, we listen to Radio Baghdad. Program tips on BBC, Japan, Beijing, Netherlands, and CBC. This summer, a DX convention in Florida.
Caribbean and domestic developments
from the Florida Keys, including more English from Tour Radio Taino. TV news from Florida, Seattle, New York, Northwest Territories, and International Vacuum. Mystery transmitters in Peace and War, the KGB's favorite radio, where to read more about it, and the propagation outlook. Among the international shortwave stations, broadcasting deliberately to North America in English, I think Radio Baghdad, Iraq, has been one of the most least listened to for many years, and it's been largely their own fault. Their so-called North American service at 0300 UTC had been on the 13-meter band, 21585 kHz. Anyone, you would think, with a minimal knowledge of shortwave propagation would know this was completely inappropriate. That service, as a matter of fact, was well heard in Australia, where there was a daylight path at that hour. But a few weeks ago, Radio Baghdad changed its North American service to much lower frequencies, and now they are being heard. Not so well in the winter, but reception is improving a bit, it seems, as we get into springtime conditions. In review of international broadcasting, number 107, and the Senate in Denmark says, Baghdad has increased its English program to 2 hours, but apparently there is no increase in content. They just pad it out with a lot of extra music. The opening sequence, comprising frequency announcements and program preview, takes all of 10 minutes. And from what I've heard of the rest of the broadcast, it's all taken at a very leisurely pace. Also, I noted them closing as early as 21:48 on 7170, nominally running until 22. I suppose the transmitter comes up on another frequency at 22. But even so, I think they are struggling to fill the 2 hours. He's speaking of the European service, which starts at 20 hours now. The North American service at 03, unless there's been a change due to DST in Iraq, is on 11750. And they also announced 9565. However, there's a lot of interference on the latter frequency. 11750 has been pretty clear here, at least in South Florida. Some nights, wind propagation is favorable, if not for the entire, almost two-hour broadcast. I'm not complaining about their padding out the program with more music, since it's very enjoyable. But all their talk, which has an anti-Western and, of course, anti-Iran slant, gets old rather quick. Let's tune in one recent Friday night to a Radio Baghdad broadcast as they play a bit of their music and give their schedule.
While our transmission to North and South America is on 31 meter band on 9565 kHz and on 25 meter band on 11750 kHz and 4300 to 0500.
There was Radio Baghdad, Iraq, starting one of their mailbag segments, and I noticed there was a bit of a contradiction on the time for the European service. They said it's on from 21 to 23 on 7170, rather than 20 to 22, as Andy Sennett had monitored it. But these were a few weeks apart, no doubt. Perhaps they made a change. As far as the parallel frequency for North America at 0300-9565, Ed LaCrosse in Redding, California says this. Sometimes it runs as late as 0457. We'd been noting the service closing around 0450 usually. Good signal strength, but co-channel to Deutsche Welle's New English to North America at 0300 on 9565. And there are other stations on the frequency as well during that two-hour period. Possibly Portugal and the BBC were also heard. So 11750 is certainly the better of the two frequencies, or has been. I'd feared that the BBC or Radio Moscow or both might come up on this frequency, as they have in the past during the summer months, interfering with Radio Baghdad. However, the BBC made a last-minute decision to stay off 11750, probably for other reasons. I have a revision to their latest frequency schedule, which shows that the Greenville relay, which was originally planned at midnight to 0330 to move up to 11750, is instead on the 31-meter band still, from midnight 30 to 0230, 9590. You may have noticed the BBC there with a good signal. That's now coming from Greenville, North Carolina. And then for another hour, 0230 to 0330 on 9515. Now, before 0230, 9515 in the BBC World Service is their Ascension relay, which is also a recent change. The 49-meter band situation has also been moved around in their Spanish broadcast, which has a bearing on reception of Austrian radio on 6155. From midnight 15 to 0315, 6155 is coming from Ascension instead of Antigua, while the 6.11 frequency is coming from Antigua instead of direct from Britain, I suppose. Meanwhile, 6075, which had been planned for the Spanish service via Ascension, has been canceled. Let's take a look at a few BBC program highlights in English. The Car, Has It a Future? 1986 sees the 100th anniversary of the appearance of the first commercially feasible petrol-driven motor car. They mean gasoline-powered automobile. Today, more than 40 countries have a car ownership as high as 20% of the total population. And there are several where it exceeds 50%. In this feature, John Pickford looks ahead to find out whether the car has a future in the 21st century. That's on Tuesday, April 15th at 12:15, repeated at 23:30, and on GMT Thursday at 03:30. There's a new six-week music series starting April 14th about David Munro and the Early Music Consort of London. It's on Mondays at 01:45, repeated Tuesdays 04:30 and 14:45. And Fridays, 08:15. And the next scheduled guest on the call-in, It's Your World, Sunday, April 20th at 11:09, with edited repeats at 16:15, and Monday at 02:30,
Yes, His Royal Highness, the Duke of Edinburgh.
The following week, Lord Carrington, Secretary General of NATO.
Well, this week, as I mentioned last week, it's New Zealand Prime Minister David Longhi. Via Bruce McGibbon, some Radio Japan program highlights for this week in April. Japan Travelogue on Monday in the general and regional services is about Yoshino, a mountainside of cherry blossoms. Radio Japan Journal on Wednesday in the general services 1 and 2 and in the regional services 1 and 3 is about setting up an information network with toys. Science Today on Wednesday in the first general service, and on Thursday in all the regional services, solving the mysteries of ancient history with a personal computer. On Radio Beijing, Culture in China, the 17th of April, Thursday, traditional Chinese painting has a history of thousands of years, but oil painting is still a relatively new medium for Chinese painters. In recent years, artists have been encouraged to explore the techniques of oil painting and explore ways to combine them with traditional Chinese painting methods. And The Land and the People on Friday, April 18th. China is a large country with a huge population. People speak dozens of different languages and hundreds or even thousands of dialects. This could make communication difficult and even create misunderstandings. How do we solve the problem?
The Land and the People will tell you the answer.
April program news from Radio Netherlands via Carl Mann and Dick Rush indicates that the Media Network show on Thursday, the 17th, features a group of radio enthusiasts who make programs for Holland's criminals, that is, prison radio. On CBC Radio, domestically in Canada, the Ideas series at 9:05 p.m. local time on April 16th and 17th, Wednesday and Thursday, is a two-parter called Family Circles, Inner Spheres, about schizophrenia. Now, a message especially for those of you who are relatively new to shortwave listening and not yet in touch with the wide variety of information sources which are available to you. I've put together an information sheet which will give you a lot of useful information, not so much per se, but will tell you where to find useful information, addresses and names of publications, how to order them and so forth, as well as the schedule of all our broadcast times. To get this information sheet, here's all you have to do. Send us a self-addressed stamped envelope. That is a 22-cent stamp, preferably a long business-sized, number 10 SASE. And also, please enclose either a quarter or a 22-cent mint stamp to cover the cost of duplicating. We will not reply unless you fulfill both these requirements. That's for U.S. listeners. If you're in Canada and don't have access to U.S. postage, I'll be glad to accept a couple of Canadian quarters or even U.S. quarters. The information sheet is really geared to those in North America, so I'm not directly offering it to those outside the U.S. and Canada. The address for our information sheet, World of Radio, Box 490-756, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33349, USA. That's a self-addressed stamped envelope, plus another 22-cent stamp or a quarter to World of Radio, Box 490-756. Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33349. That, of course, is the address for all purposes in contacting your host, Glenn Hauser,
for this and other programs and publications, if you have information to contribute. Speaking of Florida, an item from IRCADX Monitor, March 22nd, says, "What's a nice guy like you doing in Florida in August? We hope it's attending the 1986 IRCA convention, which is set for the weekend of August 22nd at the Hyatt of the Palm Beaches. As far as we know, Florida hasn't been the site for a convention in years of any radio club, so we're hoping that the time we've picked, the location, and the fact that the oceans, Disney World, attractions, and cheap airfares will bring a lot of you to the Sunshine State for the weekend and even beyond." There'll be more information as this draws closer, but possibly even I will be able to attend this convention since it's only about 30 miles away. However, I do a lot of traveling in the summer, and I can't be sure at this time whether I'll be free that particular weekend. Well, by the way, this convention is not being organized by anyone who resides in Palm Beach, at least not year-round, but instead by Ted Fleischacker in Louisville, as well as Rich Toby in California, and Leonard Kesteven all the way from Calgary, Alberta. Speaking further of Florida, last weekend I made one of my periodic monitoring trips to the Florida Keys, where it's easier to find out what's going on in Cuba, check the interference situation on various frequencies and so forth. Here are a few of my findings. The Jamaica station on 750, which had been off the air, is apparently back. In the daytime, around 2000 UTC, I was hearing the typical Jamaican accent on that frequency in English, as well as apparently a weak Cuban station as well. But the Jamaican was actually on top at that particular location. WINZ 940 is one of the Miami stations which is troubled by Cuban interference and which is getting compensation for it, monetarily anyway, but still has a lot of problems. So I was driving down the Keys through Key Largo and further on. There was a very strong Cuban station on 940, just about to equal level to WINZ at first. By the time it got to Key West, it had vanished, strangely enough. As it turned out later, it was simply off the air. The 1986 World Radio TV Handbook, copyrighted list of Cuban stations by Ronald F. Schatz, did not include a Western Cuba station on 940, but there's obviously one there now, causing severe problems to this Miami station. However, as I indicated, its schedule seems to be irregular. Or I should point out, this particular station is on the Relo network with time signals every minute and Morse code RR. Of more interest, I think, is Tour Radio Taino in Havana. That 1160 station activated a few months ago, not only in Spanish, but also in English, but not operating ordinarily after darkness. Apparently, they have shifted their schedule one real hour earlier since Cuba went on DST early a few weeks ago, which means they are off the air around 2200 UTC, long before there is any skywave going out. So you may not be able to hear it very far away from Cuba, but in the Florida Keys, it's quite strong, of course. And I have discovered that instead of, or perhaps in addition to, the five-minute English news capsules scattered throughout the day, they now have a two-hour English block each afternoon between 3 and 5 p.m. Havana time. That is, from 1900 to 2100 UTC. On weekdays, it starts with a newscast. On Sunday, when I was prepared to record, however, there was no opening news, so I suppose it's all taped in advance to give the people a day off. The Saturday broadcast mentioned names of some of their announcers, Rene Curry and Mike Donovan. This all sounds very much like Radio Havana Cuba on shortwave, except there is more of an emphasis on local events. I happened to be at Marathon, Florida, of all places, when it was time for the English broadcast to start at 1900 UTC, just on the beach, a few hundred meters from Radio Marti on 1180, 20 kilohertz away. So there was a bit of splash, as you will hear on this recording, but well, a lot less than I expected. First, we'll hear one of their jingles and almost advertisements in Spanish just before they open the English broadcast.
Prolongue su tiempo de ver, conocer y disfrutar en Cuba. Transtur acorta las distancias. Informes en el Buró de Turismo de su hotel o directamente en Santa Catalina número 360, Víbora, La Habana, a través del teléfono 418571.
Disfrutando cada hora de su visita a Cuba. Exactamente. No 59 minutos. Recesan ahora nuestras emisiones en idioma español. Las que reanudaremos dentro de dos horas. A las 5 de la tarde. Damos paso al servicio en idioma inglés, con noticias, música y notas de interés. Esta es Radio Taíno, desde La Habana. Thank you.
Aunt Tanya Jackson opening up our English set 2 hours a day to get information for your vacation. On the lineup, she'll visit a tobacco cooperative in San Francisco. We'll sample the treats at perhaps the world's largest ice cream parlor right here in Havana. We'll check out the winners of Egram Records' recent awards. The spotlight is on Cuban jazz group Rice's Nuevas at the Jazz Place. And we'll step back in time and listen to hits from the late, great Janis Joplin on Treasure Island. Plus some tips on things to do around town. Altogether, they spell the best vacation ever. Let's start things out with some music. From the Cuban group that's been on top since 1939. It's out of our life. No, my boy, I'll be too sad. Museum of Fine Arts. And while you're there, check out the exposition of textile art. Tonight's the last night to see the results of Cuba's top artists putting their talent on cloth. All right, let's get back to some fine music on Taino, the culture club from a few years back. That's number four.
Radio Marti was extremely strong at that location, but the general feeling was, driving up and down the keys, that their signal strength was just a bit weaker than it had been about 7 months earlier when we thought maybe they had raised power. Key West is an interesting place in many ways, but I'll just talk about the radio and television aspect now. The 93.5 FM station, known as K93, even though it's spelled WKRY, was promoting over and over the fact that they have a four-hour classical music show on Sundays between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. However, when the time came, they continued with their usual elevator music. 95.5 is now WARL, and they like to call themselves Killer Whale. You may think that if you're in Key West, you'll have to forget about listening to WTOP in Washington on 1500 kilohertz, because there's a local on 1500, WKIZ, get it? Keys. However, I was surprised to find that with a bit of careful lulling on my portable radio, I had no problem listening at night to WTOP through the local station. And some other northeastern stations on clear channels are also well heard as far south as Key West. In fact, some of them coming in better there for some reason than they usually do at my home location, northwest of Fort Lauderdale. However, the 1600 kilohertz station, WKWF, was for some reason completely off the air all Sunday morning and into the afternoon. Perhaps they were having some transmitter problems. At first, I thought they just had a late Sunday sign-on. I gather from a local newspaper that the final set of television UHF translators in Key West itself are on the air at last, bringing in the five Miami VHF stations. This last set had not been on a few months earlier. However, there is concern that the entire system of Florida Key translators is in jeopardy because, obviously, high-powered stations have priority on certain channels, and there are plans for more and more of those further north in Florida, such as a Channel 35 in Miami. And I can't figure out how that could possibly be, since there's already a Channel 33 there. A few other odd television items from Bill Faber's column in the March VHF-UHF Digest of the Worldwide TV FM-DX Association. Low-power television stations are supposedly designed to serve a very limited area. There are not too many of them on the air yet. They're almost like translators, except they originate programming, some of them. But Donald D. Marshall reports that there's one in Houston, Texas, KO5HU, which means it's Channel 5, which is also on a satellite, SATCOM 4 Transponder 18. They showed up just before Christmas. They were going to be on 24 hours, 7 days a week, and we're going to get a 1-800 number to take requests. They also ID as TV5, but their main title is Video Hits USA, and they are in stereo. So how about that? A superstation, which in its original incarnation is nothing but a very low-power local station. In Seattle, Washington, KING are some very familiar and important letters, not only the name of the county, but the name of Channel 5 television, KING-TV. Now, however, there is a KONG-TV, Channel 16. David Sinclair says, This station was scheduled to come on the air February 1st, 1984, and have the original King Kong movie. This did indeed upset KING-TV, but Kong-TV has not yet come on the air. He phoned them, and they hope to come on by May 1st, 1986. Another item concerning call letters. New York's Channel 5 has switched from WNEW-TV to now WNYW. Yes, the call sign once used by Radio New York Worldwide on shortwave. If you've not yet had TVDX from the Northwest Territories, as most of us haven't, you may never. It seems some of the existing low-band VHF stations are lowering their powers. And Walter Patton tells Fred, as outlying transmitters in the Yukon and Northwest Territories begin to be fed directly by satellite, they no longer require a high or medium power station from which to receive their signal. As a result, the power of these central transmitters is being reduced, and it will become much more difficult to DX either of these areas. Two cases in point. Channel 6, CHAK, in the Inuvik Northwest Territories, has gone down from 3 kilowatts to 0.122. And CBEBT, Channel 4, in Pine Point, has reduced from 7.9 kilowatts to only 262 watts. And David Sinclair sends a clipping from the Winnipeg Free Press, indicating that the cable system there is now wanting to take its U.S. network service off the satellite, which means stations originating in Detroit, instead of getting U.S. television networks out of the nearby North Dakota stations. That will mean, of course, a complete loss of local interest news. Hugh Miller sends some clippings from Seattle newspapers, which raise more questions than they answer. In a photo caption concerning that great peace march across the country, which is scheduled to end in Washington, D.C. on November 14th, among the many items the marchers are carrying along with them is a radio station. Now, whether this refers to some kind of two-way communication or an actual low-power radio broadcasting transmitter, I don't know. But if the Great Peace March comes near you, I suggest you tune around the dial and let us know what you hear. And a photo caption with another story says, a masked Protestant paramilitary group member sits at the microphone of Belfast's Radio Free Ulster to broadcast instructions during a 24-hour general strike. So where can Radio Free Ulster be heard on the dial? Grant Shaman in California has been reading a book called London Match by Len Dayton, published last year by Knopf in New York, which has this passage on page 187. There was a small shortwave radio receiver, too, a Sony 2001 with preset and scan tuning. Instead of using batteries, it was plugged into the mains via a power adapter, and I warned him that if he unplugged it, there was a danger that the adapter would burn out. But he seemed to know that already. Not surprising, since the 2001 has long since been standard issue for KGB agents. So if you're the owner of a 2001, you're in great company. I'm not familiar with this book. I'm not even sure whether it's fiction or nonfiction. But here's something I'm very familiar with. Modern Electronics. Check your newsstand for the April 1986 issue, which contains another of my communications columns. Look for the golden cover and the red logo, Modern Electronics. Also, a violet strip across the top saying your one-stop source of electronics information. Robert Horvitz points out that the Whole Earth Review, Spring 1986 issue, has a lengthy section about wireless matters, not listening to shortwave broadcasts in particular, but many other uses of radio. And, of course, the main purpose is to refer you to other sources you may want to read. The main emphasis in this particular wirelessness section is on satellites and personal radio. The propagation outlook from Boulder, Colorado. Solar activity is expected to be very low through April 28th. Geomagnetic activity should be mostly unsettled, but recurrent active conditions are expected through April 15th and 17th to 25th. This has been World of Radio, a listener-supported public service program about communications around the world, especially shortwave. This is Glenn Hauser inviting you to tune in again next week at this same time.
You're listening to recordings of Glenn Hauser's World of Radio program on the International Service of Texas Radio Shortwave. If you want to listen to the latest episode of World of Radio, you can find the schedule on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/texasradiosw. You can also find lots more information on the World of Radio website at worldofradio.com. If you'd like an electronic verification that you heard this program, email a detailed reception report to texasradiosw@gmail.com. Again, that's texasradiosw@gmail.com. There's a special QSL for this show. Here's episode 342 of World of Radio, recorded in 1986 from WRNO, New Orleans, Louisiana. The program's been shortened because of time constraints.
This is Glenn Hauser with World of Radio, number 342. Anarchon 86.
Special Liberty Ham Session.
A new flag of convenience. We'll hear two exotic Caribbean stations. Mexico plans a border network. A station for travelers only. NDXC has a transmitter.
But ours. Where
the
world
of private
and what the Canadians are going to offer.
Good news on the privacy.
A lot of
news. Station news from Mexico and
Korea.
Question time.
Are you on the beam from Australia? Should we change frequency? This is against jamming. Program tips from Vladivostok, Beijing, Japan, VOA, Radio Earth, the CBC, and the Coffee Guy, and cut the major meeting of BX and shortwave listeners at the Convention of the Association of North American Radio Clubs.
And the 1986 Anarchon is going nuts. It'll be held
July 18th, 19th, and 20th in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. Sponsored once again by Radio Canada International and Ian McFarlane. Over 200 DXers from around the world, but mostly North America, are expected to attend, as well as numerous representatives from shortwave stations. For registration forms, convention program details, send one international reply coupon or 35 cents in mint unused U.S. stamps to Anarchon 1986, care of Ian McFarlane, RCI, PO Box 6000, Montreal, Quebec, H3C, 3A8, Canada. That's Anarchon 86, Caribbean McFarlane, RCI, Box 6000, Montreal, Quebec, H3C, 3A8, for Anarchon 86, occurring July 18th through 20th. Among the activities tentatively programmed are continuous film showings, exhibits, seminars, a bus tour of Montreal, for which there's an extra charge, a wine and cheese reception, frequency management seminar and open forum, another seminar on shortwave jamming and the Anarch Woodpecker Project, a seminar on WARC 84 and 87, intersessional activities and a preview of WARC 87, a seminar on the results of ITU Region 2 Medium Wave Broadcasting Conference, recording of a special edition of RCI's SWL Digest program, a banquet Saturday evening, and on Sunday, a seminar on computer bulletin boards on problems faced by newcomers to shortwave listening, the usual quiz hosted by Andy Sennett of the World Radio TV Handbook and the International Broadcasters Forum. I believe I mentioned recently that issue 109 of the print counterpart of World of Radio, Review of International Broadcasting, was already in the mail. Well, I got caught. I usually have to plan ahead to anticipate a mailing date since the program is recorded ahead of time. There were unforeseen problems. The printing press broke down, and this caused almost a week's delay. But I'm glad to report 109 finally did get in the mails on Friday the 13th. Here's an item from our expert ham news contributor, Rob Girardi. There will be a French special event station to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the French gift of the Statue of Liberty to the U.S. The call sign is TV6KAR, Tango Victor 6, Kilo Alpha Romeo. It's already active and will be until July 5th. It operates on 14223 100 UTC. But they plan to use all HF ham bands as well. Reception report should go to F6GLL, Foxtrot 6, Golf Lima Lima, for a special commemorative QSL card. Those who DX ships are aware of the great number of call signs bearing prefixes originating in such places as Panama, Liberia, and Greece. Flags of convenience. Now, there may well be another, but I'm not sure what the call sign will be. Ernie Baer put this item from the Winnipeg Free Press, May 17th. It's by Martin Bailey of the London Observer Service. Antarctic Island of Desolation to be nominal home for ships. A remote Antarctic island is to become the latest flag of convenience for the shipping world. Kerguelen Island, population 76, will allow ship owners to register vessels there in order to avoid expensive requirements. Kerguelen, also known as the Island of Desolation, is a French territory just off the Antarctic coast in the southern Indian Ocean. The main island, surrounded by 300 islets, was discovered in 1772 and explored by Captain Cook 4 years later. Once frequented by whalers and sailors, now its only inhabitants are scientists at the French base of Port-au-François. Last week, France's new Secretary of State of the Sea, Ambroise Gaillac, announced that Kerguelen, part of the French Southern and Antarctic Territories Department, is to be set up as a major shipping flag. This is to discourage French ship owners from transferring to foreign flags in order to avoid tough restrictions on employing French crews. Gaillac said that Kerguelen ships would only have to employ 25% French sailors on their vessels, and this could save owners as much as $2,000 a day on an 18-man crew. Already, some ships used for oil production work have been registered in Kerguelen. Lloyd's of London records show a fleet of 15 ships, most owned by Paris-based Feronia International Shipping. The French authorities expect the new registration facilities in Antarctica will be particularly attractive for bulk carriers. Already, applications have been filed for two of these vessels. French seamen's unions are angry about the proposal because it will reduce the number of jobs for their members. None of the Kerguelen fleet is ever likely to visit the remote island where they are registered, nearly 5,000 miles south of India. The only vessels which ever come are the island supply ship, which calls four times a year, the Le Havre-registered Mario de Fuen, and six Soviet fishing boats. Well, I've just checked the globe, so some corrections are in order. It's actually only about 4,000 miles south of the southern tip of India. The latitude is about 48 degrees, certainly away from the tropics, but hardly in Antarctica. In fact, it's further north than the Falkland Islands, and of course, closer to the equator than the northern boundary of the United States. Kerguelen would be an interesting place to visit, but for now, I'll have to settle for some slightly more accessible islands. I recently spent a week visiting six Caribbean islands. Antigua, Montserrat, St. Martin, Anguilla, Saba, and St. Eustatius. And, of course, I investigated the radio scene thoroughly. In fact, I could do many, many programs and write many, many words about this subject. But for now, just some brief bits of news. I discovered a new medium-wave radio station on the island of St. Eustatius, commonly called Statia. It's on 1120 kilohertz, PJE3. I understand it's been on the air since mid-May 1985, but it's gone unnoticed in the DX world because it's not on the air in the evenings, signing off about sunset at 2230 UTC and signing on at 1000 hours. They began with the national anthem of the Netherlands, which we're familiar with from Radio Nederland, and then it was almost 1007 UTC, and they began playing the Netherlands Antilles national anthem.
By the Cinti Station Broadcasting NV. Our studios are located at the Cotterwood Road. Our transmitter and servers are located at Jovel and Cinti Station in the Netherlands. We will be transmitting on our same frequency of 1120 kHz, as has been assigned to us by the federal government in Willemstad, Kirchhoff, Netherlands, and Cinti. To all our radio listeners, we want to say a very pleasant good morning and welcome to our devotional program in respect with the Master.
Radio Statia, spelled S-T-A-T-I-A. It's the common name of the island of St. Eustatius. They do not have to sign off at sunset. They simply feel there is not enough business, probably because of television competition, to continue on into the evening. But they might eventually extend as late as 0200 UTC. If they do not, midwinter would be the best chance for North Americans to catch them on 1120 at sign on or sign off, just at sunrise or sunset. So there's a little more darkness on the path, although sunrise and sunset times do not vary very much in the tropics. Power is 1 kilowatt, and their tower can be seen just north of the airport. By the way, Ernie Cooper discovered the station independently during his stay in the U.S. Virgin Islands in late April, only recently published in National Radio Club DX News for June 9th. Another fascinating station is on the neighboring island of Saba, PJF1, 1410 kilohertz, the voice of Saba. You may recall my reporting previously that it had recently been rediscovered in the DX world since it had been dropped from the World Radio TV handbook some years ago, although it has continued to exist. Saba has a population of only about 1,000. It's a beautiful place, a volcanic peak sticking up out of the ocean. And the more I think about it, the more I wonder why I ever came back. The voice of Saba is heard well in St. Martin, a much larger market. And as a matter of fact, they have a remote studio in Phillipsburg, which I also visited. Normal evening sign-off is about 0200 UTC, but their evening programming had also been curtailed, I suppose because of lack of business at the moment. Signing off around 2330 or 2400, but that is well after sunset. 1410 kilohertz is the current frequency. When the station started, it was on two different split frequencies, 1445 and 1435. I suggested to the affable owner of the Voice of Saba, Max Nicholson, that it would be nice to run a special DX test on one of the old frequencies, since he still has two pairs of crystals for those old frequencies. Of course, this would require special permission from the licensing authorities. He has just acquired a new 5-kilowatt transmitter, which he hoped to have installed by the end of June. Of course, the new transmitter would not accommodate the old crystals. However, perhaps the old transmitter will remain as a standby, so the test could still be arranged. He has received some DX reports from Norway not long ago, and of course, using the old split frequencies would ensure a much better chance of audibility in North America. The Voice of Saba signs on at 1000 UTC, except on Sundays when it's much later, around 1700. However, at least with the old transmitter, it is never turned off the air. There's an open carrier, even during the night hours and the Sunday morning hours when there is no programming. So I also suggested that it would be helpful if he could run a continuous identification tape during these hours. Because of its peculiar geographical problems, the Voice of Saba has a rather roundabout way of feeding its transmitter. The main studios at the bottom on the west side of Saba are out of sight from the transmitter on the east side of Saba. So audio from the main studio is fed by VHF link to the remote studio in Phillipsburg, St. Martin, and then back on FM frequencies to the transmitter on Saba. Here's how PJF1 signed on a few minutes before the station we heard previously at 1002 UTC.
PJF1, 1410 over the dial, with studio status in Martin. Transmitting on the frequency, 1410 kilohertz, with lines between 200 morning to those of 2 and the transmitter located at Calvary's in Saber, studios in Baltimore, Saber, and studios at Downfield, St. Martin. And for morning to do, going to it.
As you may have gathered, this is a predominantly English-speaking area, although they are the Netherlands Antilles, but the stations also carry some programming in Dutch and other languages. Owen Williamson in El Paso, Texas, found this in El Universal de Ciudad Juarez by the radio columnist Mario Lagarreta Hernandez, the June 4th issue. Prospects are good for the establishment of a border broadcasting network to publicize Mexico for what it is through its language, music, and customs. He says the president and northern zone manager of the Grupo Siete radio consortium have seriously discussed the formation of such a service on their stations in Reynosa, Nuevo Laredo, and Ciudad Juarez. The Grupo Siete owns XCROK, Radio Cañon, a powerful station on 800 kilohertz, which already directs much of its programming to Latino listeners in the U.S. And it could be assumed that any border network might be similar. Legarreta Hernandez comments that such an operation would be something very much needed, given the current proliferation of foreign broadcast media in the language of Cervantes, above all here in our border area. Very interesting, but I would suggest they really ought to do something in English as well. Also in NRCDX News of June 9th, an item from Edward R. Cotton in Chesapeake, Virginia. That's WGH 1310. My favorite radio station, since it's my initials, has a new format, Traveler's Radio. Entire programming is dedicated to travel and vacation tips in southeastern Virginia and northeastern North Carolina. News updates and weather every 10 minutes. Probably the only station in the country that programs itself for the visitors to an area rather than the local population. There are about 3 million visitors annually, so maybe they are onto something. Here's a tape I received in the mail recently.
It's time for an update on the status of NDXE Global Radio. My name is Gene Taylor, and for the time being, the voice of NDXE. Now, as of this moment, you have an idea of what I sound like. Here is an example of what NDXE's musical signature will be sounding like. It's a passage from a song called Dixie. From the American Civil War period, it was a rallying song of the Confederacy. Actually, the entire song contains several highly recognizable passages that can and may well be used to help identify us to the world. For example, there are others, and we'll let you listen to them in just a little while. We'd appreciate your comments about them. You can address your correspondence to NDXE, Post Office Box 569, Opelika, that's O-P-E-L-I-K-A, Opelika, Alabama, 36801, USA. In return, if you can include two IRCs to help cover surface mail postage costs, NDXE will be delighted to send a free copy of our listener newsletter, the NDXE Planet. Now, this seems to be an appropriate time for us to try to thank the thousands of people who've already written to us or returned the questionnaire from the 40th anniversary edition of WRTH. Our very special thanks go out to Jonathan Marks of Radio Nettledom, to Duke Alexander of the DX Party Line, to Radio South Africa, HCJB, Radio Havana, the Voice of America and the BBC, Radio Austria, Radio España, and all of the rest who have given us time on air. If I've forgotten to mention someone, it's very simply difficult to include everyone who has mentioned NDXE. But thank you all very much. The universal question seems to be when. When will NDXE go on the air? We have experienced more than our share of difficulties in the past. October 15th of this year now appears to be a totally reliable on-air date. We wish we were on the air right now. We trust all of our difficulties are in the past and that we can now proceed on schedule. NDXE's programming plans are taking firmer steps with every passing day. We're now offering commercial advertisers access to the cream of America's radio entertainment programs hosted by the best performers available. From Dick Clark's Countdown America to Future Hits, the latest upcoming singles and albums from America and the world, to Live from Gillies, a one-hour live country and western program direct from America's most famous country nightclub, to Encore, hosted by William D. Williams, and spotlighting for 2 hours each week a special time of America's big band era, to In Concert, a one-hour live performance weekly series with the biggest and brightest stars in popular music. All of these programs are real, and not just the dreams of someone who hopes that they happen, they will happen. Now, remember, if your listeners would like more information about NDXE, they can get it. Two IRCs to NDXE. Post Office Box 569, Opelika, Alabama, 36801, USA. We'll get them a copy of our latest listener newsletter and information about our listeners club. The global high-frequency listening audience, the press, and radio community have been more than patient and kind with NDXE, and we thank them for that kindness and that patience. Thank you for the opportunity to let you know the latest about NDXE. I sincerely hope the next time you hear my voice, it'll be on the air on NDXE.
He sends me the tapes. For a different perspective on all this, check out the June 2nd issue of Broadcasting Magazine. On page 36, there's a one-page commentary by Stanley Linewall, engineering director of Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty. His main point seems to be that there are too few frequencies for all the new U.S. shortwave stations coming on the air, and that they're not really effective in reaching their target areas. Thanks to Dave Hughes for a copy of this. Robert Horvitz sends a report that there's been a strange new development in the Electronic Communications Privacy Act. Since you may have heard his full report on
this or another program recently,
the time is limited here. I won't go into detail. However, it will appear in full in the next issue of Review of International Broadcasting. Basically, a substitute bill was introduced on June 10th and passed by a vote of 34 to nothing. There's no longer an H.R. 3378. The new one is H.R. 4952. A significant difference is that the new one adopts the definition of interception proposed by EDARC last February, acquisition of the contents of a communication. This is the definition currently used in federal law protecting oral and wire communications. The definition used in the old bill was interception of the transmission of the contents, which would have made it a crime merely to detect the presence of an encrypted signal without any attempt being made to penetrate the protective code, that is, without any actual violation of communications privacy. So things are looking up for those of us concerned about the Electronic Communications Privacy Act. I'll bet you didn't know that Rai in Italy carried out test transmissions via Mojave Gabon. This has just come to our attention in the April issue of Latino America de X from Argentina. This is apparently was carried out without publicity, except to official monitors of Rai. The test took place for 1 week at the end of February for 15 minutes, midnight to midnight 15 UTC on 15330, 15240, or 15440, in order to assess whether it would be worthwhile to have a permanent relay from Italy via Gabon to South America. Are you on the beam for Radio Australia, which does not officially broadcast to North America? An interesting thing I noted while in St. Martin, Dutch West Indies, was that the 19-meter frequency of 15240 was extremely strong compared to the other 19-meter and 16-meter band frequencies from Radio Australia, which do better up here in Florida. The reason turned out to be obvious when I got back and checked out the azimuth on that frequency on a globe. It's 118 degrees, which goes right through St. Martin. So it does make a difference to be right on the beam from a station, although you can certainly hear it if you're considerably off beam. That led me to further check the beam angles beamed across the Pacific, which also go into North America for some of their frequencies. The 53-degree beam from Shepparton goes through Honolulu, Eugene, Great Falls, Weyburn, Saskatchewan, Gaspé, Quebec, and then down through Porto Basque in the north southwestern corner of Newfoundland. That particular azimuth is used on 5995 and 15160. The next two are very close together, so I'll sort of combine them. These cities I'll mention are just approximately near the center of the beam, 63 and 65 degrees, roughly through Los Angeles, Denver, Omaha, Chicago to Milwaukee, Lansing, Hamilton, Ontario, Concord, New Hampshire. And that applies to 17795, 15395, 11720, and 9580 kilohertz, as well as 6060 kilohertz. Finally, the 73-degree beam, quite a bit further south, enters the continent around Guaymas, Mexico, then through Odessa, Texas, Idabel in southeast Oklahoma, Nashville, Tennessee, and Richmond, Virginia. So let me explain why reception in the southeastern U.S. of Radio Australia is not that great. We're a bit off the major beams. Although at this distance, they have spread out quite a bit. Well, that last one, 73 degrees, applies to 15320 kilohertz. Some of these frequencies also use other beams to other parts of the world, even at the same time these ones are on. Now I'd like some feedback on quality of world of radio reception on some of our shortwave frequencies. WRNO is using 9852.5 kilohertz for our Saturday 2330 broadcast. This is rather squeezed by stations, only 2.5 kilohertz on either side. It's hardly ever listenable here in Florida, but I hope it's better northeastward from New Orleans. I wonder if listeners in that area find that to be the case. Or would reception be better on 7355 kilohertz, to which WRNO switches immediately following at midnight UTC? WRNO has authorization to use 7355 as early as 2300, so perhaps they would be willing to cooperate and change half an hour earlier if a majority of our listeners feel that would be inappropriate. Please let us know. And also, 9715, used Sundays at 1300 UTC, has a considerable amount of co-channel interference, mostly from Asian stations, I believe, which might be a problem in Western North America, if anyone's listening at that hour. So I'd like to know how reception is on that frequency in your area. Or you can just write and tell us,
What is your best time and frequency, both from the standpoint of your convenience and reception quality, for listening to World of Radio? Your address is box 490756, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33349. Please note that I am not offering verification cards. I would simply like some reports to assist us in assuring that World of Radio is heard as clearly as possible. Thanks to Mickey Delmage in Edmonton, Alberta, and Joe Hannon in Philadelphia for copying the announced frequency schedule of Radio Korea in English, which we requested. But before going with it, I'd like to clear up a contradiction. One of them reports there is a broadcast at 2330 to Europe, the Mideast, and Africa, 15575, 6485, and 7550. While the other has it at 2030 UTC, which would seem more likely, but you never know, with Radio Korea. So, can anyone clear up this particular contradiction? If you ever watched Donahue or many other television shows, you can hardly have missed Vladimir Posner of Radio Moscow, who has been barnstorming the United States recently on his first visit in many years. Thanks to David Alpert, Mike Cooper, and Brian Penny for some clippings, as well as Hugh Miller, reporting that Posner has actually criticized Soviet jamming. He describes jamming of Radio Liberty and Radio Free Europe as counterproductive, contending that this attracts undue attention to the programs. I recently gave a long list of frequencies for radio station Pacific Ocean in Vladivostok and asked if anyone had heard their brief English segment recently. Now, in the latest issue of the Ozark Mountain DX log, Wendell Craighead in Kansas reports that he has. Time may vary slightly, but it was on a Saturday at 1857 to 1902 UTC, best frequency 11690 kilohertz. Radio Beijing plans a program for the 26th of June on China in Construction, that's Thursday, about nuclear industry in China. And Radio Japan Journal on Wednesday the 25th, what life means in a nuclear age, from the International Medical Doctors Symposium in Hiroshima. Japan, as I see it, on Wednesday and Friday, in the time slot usually occupied by Our Heritage, is about youth in the post-war rubble. Another station which speaks English with a strange accent is the Voice of America, special English service, Words and Their Stories, on Saturday, June 21st, and Sunday, June 22nd, is about the horse in colorful colloquial expressions, like to beat a dead horse. Mike Polis of Radio Earth tells me they've made another step forward in their Curacao project, having received a letter from Landsradio, one of the government agencies, saying that the Netherlands Ministry of Communication will issue a letter of intent to issue Radio Earth a broadcasting license. Also, in case you've lost track of the summer program schedule of Radio Earth, here it is. It's at 0300 UTC on 7355 kHz, UTC Tuesday through Sunday via WHRI. There are three different programs per week, each one repeated. Program number one is on Thursday night, U.S. time, rebroadcast.